一度だけの恋なら君の中で遊ぼう、わがままなキスをしよう。
Alright, we're here for another episode of Speaker Podcast. And you know, Adrian, today is a great day. Do you know why?
It's Sunday. It's just after 10:30 in Japan, Tokyo.
Sunday night. We should probably be getting ready for work tomorrow, but no. Macross Delta has finally caught up to us.
Oh yeah, that's right. We have seen both episodes almost in their entirety, minus the openings. But we did see the ending a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we already did a previous podcast. So this is a little bit of a twist on our podcast. It's kind of shorter and more to the point.
Right, yeah. As has been, you know, our whole shtick to date. You know, we get in there and try to get information from Japan as quick as possible out there to people. And we're here in Tokyo. We're really lucky that we're getting to see Delta in real time. And I don't say that lightly, because if you live anywhere else in Japan, you don't get to see it tonight. You have to wait till later on in the week. So we thought, you know, we've already done these two podcasts about episode 1 and 2 before they broadcast. So now let's get these smaller podcasts done after each episode, and we're going to be throwing out our impressions. This is raw. There's no subtitles. We don't got time for no subtitles. We could be getting everything wrong for all we know, but you know, this is the here and now. Everyone's talking about Delta, and we just want to get in here and ride that wave while it's cresting.
Yep. So, and we're going to share our thoughts with the listening audience of what happened in the show. Things we've either heard on the side or things that we caught visually or what the characters are saying. And probably get this out in just about the same time as the Raw gets out. But definitely, if you're watching the Raw, this will kind of be like a little companion. So you can watch the Raw and reference what we're talking about. And then probably in the next 8 hours or in the next day, you'll get the
subs, yeah. I guess, from wherever people get those. And I must say, we've had several people contact me with requests that we do this. And at first, I was kind of on the fence, but I've just had so many great discussions about Delta with the fans over here. Everyone's talking about it. So it's a lot of extra work, but we thought, heck, look, let's get into it. So these aren't going to be our normal long-length podcasts. We're trying to keep them to about half an hour,
yeah,
and just keep every week. So those who want a bit of a spoiler before the episode can listen in, or those who want to hear what people are saying about it can tune in immediately after the episode.
Yeah.
The choice is yours. And with me I have, of course, myself, Gwyn Campbell, your usual host. And next to me I have
Adrian Lozano, the ongoing host since the beginning, co-host. And
next to him we have
Egan Liu.
And Egan is Egan. And on the other side, we've had to Skype him in from the other side of Tokyo, we have
Renato Rivera. Are we saying our full names now?
Oh, yes. Yes, we are.
All right.
Hi there, Renato. I hear people refer to you as Renato. But look, enough of that. Let's get into this. Episode 3. We've literally just watched it like half an hour ago.
Nah. Well, first, got to tell everybody, you are listening to the Speaker Podcast, Macross Delta, Episode 3, post-broadcast Ger Talk Show. Thank you.
That's what we're going to be calling these, the Ger Talk series. So, episode 3, without any further ado, before we even talk about that, let's talk about this opening. Renato, what did you think of the opening? Because last week during the broadcast, we finally got an opening and an ending. What did you think?
For the record, right, last week we finally got an opening and an ending. And also, I finally got episode 2, okay? I wasn't one of the lucky few like you guys were that went to see episode 2. So it was all new for me. I'm not sure how jarring it would have been to watch it without the openings. But I will say one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like the ending more than I like the beginning, the opening.
I agree the with you 100%.
So do I.
The ending sequence is very very original. We've never had that kind of, well, I guess we kind of Dynamite 7-ish, like it's mixing live action stuff. It really reminded me a lot of what's that show that Hideaki Yano did based on a manga? His and Her Circumstances.
Oh, Karekano?
Karekano, yeah. So Kareshi Kanojo no Jijo. I don't know if you ever saw that show, but the ending is pretty much the same. It just doesn't have the characters in there.
Yeah.
And it's the song is cool. It's a very famous song as well. I don't remember what it's called. But anyway, so the opening, it's okay. It just feels like every other anime opening. and I felt the same way when I first watched and saw the triangular opening for Macross Frontier. And I felt it didn't really get a really cool opening until the second half of the series, which was it Lion?
Yeah, I'm
I know. Oh!
I'm 100% there with you, Renato. And actually, I've said the same thing during the week to you, Adrian. Like, yeah. Even as a huge Maya Sakamoto fan, even I thought Triangler was a relatively weak Macross opening when I first saw it. It didn't scream Macross to me. And similarly, the opening to Delta doesn't scream Macross to me either. It hits a beat about halfway through where the rhythm picks up. You've got a lot of cool mecha flying around. It looks cool, and it does get kind of stuck in your head. But I think that ending, it really sounds... It's kind of a throwback musically to something you'd expect to get in the late 90s.
Yes, I was thinking exactly the same thing. Yeah. It doesn't feel like one of those Valkyrie songs, actually.
Yeah.
So, let me say one more thing about the opening, right? Mm-hmm. It's more interesting regarding what we actually see, because there's a few teasers, I think, for what's going to come up, right? You know, they almost show you the SV-262 transformation. They almost show you who the bad guys are, kind of, like, who's that kid there with the cape. But this week, so we've seen two episodes with the opening, right? The second and the third.
Mm-hmm.
This week, they added stuff. I don't know if you noticed.
Such as?
Or maybe I'm making stuff up.
I didn't notice.
Well, if I remember correctly, last week they didn't show... And, like, I haven't seen it a billion times, you know. I've only seen it once, I think. Or maybe twice. Last week they showed just... I don't remember what they showed last week. This week they showed Freya in her... In her costume, the Valkyria costume, kind of transforming, right? You remember they had a montage of all the transformations for the Valkyria girls?
Uh-huh.
They showed her, like, flashing around. And then they also showed... what's the main character's goddamn name? Oh, Hayate Melman. There you go. They showed him in the Valkyrie flying around. So there you go. If they'd shown those earlier, it would have been kind of spoilers, right?
That would make sense.
Unless they did show them and I missed it. But anyway, I was watching it today and I thought, hey, because they've done that for every other Macross opening, right?
In Macross 7, they deliberately held back on certain sequences during the opening animation because they knew they couldn't show that who was going to be in the cockpit of the Fire Valkyrie.
Right, exactly.
And they did a similar thing actually with the first Macross series where there was certain scenes where that we didn't know at that point because no one had heard of what Macross was, that it would transform. So they held back on certain sequences of the Valkyrie transforming until the second and third episodes.
Yeah, they did that with everything. They even did that with Aquarian, if you remember. They didn't show, if I remember correctly, they didn't show the opening until like the fourth episode or so, because up until that point, not all of those three robot combining robot designs had been shown in the actual episodes.
Hmm.
So they didn't want to, even though all the toy magazines had revealed them anyway.
And just like Macross 7, we see a ever so brief glimpse of who may or may not be on the other side in terms of enemy in the opening credits, like we were saying, the teaser of what's to come.
Right. So it's always a balance between teasing and then just full-on showing all the cool stuff that's going to appear. So we might get two or three different versions depending on how the story progresses at this early stage.
Yeah. Also, there's going to be some fixes to the opening that I have gotten wind of. Probably from...
Knights of the Wind?
No, yes, I've gotten directly from the Knights of the Wind. Probably from episode 5 or 6, there may be some slight changes in where the 3D models are placed, because apparently there were some render issues, and that opening really got in, like, just in time, from what I heard. And when they actually viewed it, there's mistakes. So, yeah, either some of the shots were intentionally put in, and some will probably be re-rendered, because there's some obvious mistakes and scale issues.
So let's get into the episode itself.
I wanted to say a little bit more about the ending. We talked about it previous week when we first saw it, that we were talking about how, yeah, it does homage in a sense to Macross Dynamite 7, But even before that, both Macross Dynamite 7's ending and this ending homage the original television series. Because what we had there was animation footage up against photographs in real life, just like we're seeing here. So everything is calling back to the first Macross series.
And the Decade of Baby ending as well had some photographs, didn't it?
Yes, exactly.
New York and stuff.
Yeah,
so... Yeah, it's kind of keeping in traditions, some traditions, you know. So yeah, you have to, I think, look a bit hard for them maybe, but there's homages. Yeah, you're right.
All right, are we done reminiscing, guys? Can we get into this?
Let's start off.
Yeah. So, if I had to sum up what I was feeling watching episode 3 tonight, it would be that this show continues to be fun. I actually think it's more fun than Frontier. And Adrian, you mentioned...
Absolutely.
Be quiet, Renato. You... Okay, be quiet. It's not that it's more... fun than Frontier. Frontier had a specific job, and Frontier's job was to bring Macross as a franchise back into the fold of anime, because it did not really have a presence in 2005, 2006 here in Japan. Zero did nothing. Some people remember, and I'm talking about people in the anime industry, some people remembered Seven, but everyone pretty much did not remember Zero unless they actually worked on it. And Frontier hit the beats, because the one difference between this show and Frontier is this show's already gone on episode 3, and I've walked around Akihabara a few times, and I'm not hearing any of the music being played in any of the shops. But I sure do hear Lion played every once in a while when I'm walking around. And back then, from the day after that the Culture Edition was shown at the end of the year, that's all you heard was...
No, because Lion was the second opening.
No, not Lion. That you Triangle? Still hear Lion now, but I'm talking about Triangle. Not Triangle. I'm talking the Cheryl song when she comes in.
Oh, Diamond
Decade.
Yeah, that one. That song was played all day long in Akihabara.
Yeah.
And then when it hit the karaoke cons, it was like everyone was singing it, and that is not happening for Delta.
Right.
So that is one thing where Frontier did its job. It got Macross back on the map. And this show is definitely, it's more heartwarming, I would say.
It definitely feels more modern in terms of anime, and it also feels newer. Don't get me wrong, I love Frontier. And we're only 3 episodes into Delta, but so far every one of them has left me with, you know, a grin on my face. Now, this episode gave us some character development. It moved again really quick, I thought. And it also gave us another new song, which means they're cranking out the songs. Although, as you mentioned, Adrian, none of them seem to be, except for Ikenai Borderline, none of them seem to be making much of a splash as of yet. So we left off last episode with Hayate touching Mirage's plane, Valkyrie, Mirage looking like she was almost going to deck him again. And when we opened this week, you know, she was telling him off. He explained that, well, you know, he's going to fly. He wants to fly. So she takes him up in a 2-seater in a 31, and basically flies him around until he pukes his guts out. Of course, at the same time, we have Freya, who's going through her initial training with Valkyrie. And parallel to that, we have to get Hayate his inspiration for flying. And... you know, he's not much of a student. Captain Johnson assigns Mirage to Hayate as his instructor, which makes no sense because she was pointed out in the first episode as being the newcomer to the squad, as being a greenhorn, and yet now she's his instructor. But maybe Johnson sees it as a learning experience for her.
I noticed in the synopsis they point out she's the only one of the Delta team that's totally against him being a part of the team. So in that sense, maybe that's why she's the best person to train her.
Yeah. And so train him she does, in a manner of speaking. There's this whole subplot with some of the... what are we going to call these? They're technically the Sea Cats, but but I've heard various people refer to them as, you know, we originally said cat seals. I've heard mercats. Technically, they're sea cats. And they're stealing food from Chuck's restaurant. And when you think
that was
about
the best scene in the whole episode.
It was hilarious, wasn't it? But these things have got to be fast, right? Because they're living on this planet where the native inhabitants have gills and can swim damn fast underwater. They're all
well,
like
they were really fast. Yeah. This really fat meerkat, sea cat, sea lion, it was basically an agile version of Garfield, like with the eyes and everything. If Garfield had been born not lazy and not saying like, oh, Mondays, and actually had to hunt for his food because John Arbuckle wasn't there, that would be this guy. He steals the show. Like, the whole first half of the episode was just this cat seal.
And you know, it's funny, because when I first saw a screenshot of that cat, I was like, come on, the ones in episode two are way cuter. I'm not going to like this fat one. He looks grumpy, but he's amazing. No. I'm waiting for
Best
him to bring
character
up
ever.
Plushies guaranteed. I'm
absolutely,
telling.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
because when he smacks him in the face, I almost laughed out loud.
And when I say he was stealing from Chuck's restaurant, we have to say Chuck's restaurant is shown. His siblings are shown. His sister is shown. His siblings, or his younger kid brothers and sisters, are the ones who sold Freya or tricked her into buying the phone.
Really buying, as we find out.
She kind of walked off with it because she was off to do the audition. Mm. So
yeah.
she didn't steal it on purpose, but... And they didn't give it to her. They were just more like, try this on. And then it was Hayate that was like, we got to go. And then pulled her away.
So they think that she's the thief. So they call her a thief all the time.
But they did, you know, when she put that on in episode two, it did say initiating...
contract.
Transfer, right? It was Furikomi Kanjo.
No, I think it was Keiyaku Kanryo.
No, that was afterwards. That was after it wrapped around her. It also said initiating transfer of funds.
What does that mean exactly in English?
What, Keiyaku Kanryo? It means that contract completed.
There you go.
Hmm. So, and we have this whole situation where most of the members of Wild Kure and of Delta Platoon drop by to hang out at this at Chuck's restaurant, and it's pretty cool. You know, some of them apparently live around there in the building, and so Hayate is obsessed with catching this sea cat, and it uses some maneuvers to avoid being captured, which are pretty obviously going to be his inspiration for flight maneuvers, much like as a throwback to Macross Zero. With the fish and the flying
fish. Funny how we're all thinking the exact same thing as we're watching this episode. Right.
But
we should
surprise this towards the end, but we'll get into that, yeah.
Well, the throwbacks go further than that, because when Hayate is training, they put him into a VF-1EX, which is a modified Valkyrie used for training based on the VF-1. If you look on the inside of it, it is a completely new cockpit. It's completely Frontier style. All digital readouts, etc. But it is very much shaped in the vein of a classic VF-1, and it is quite the nostalgia kick. Silence. Okay, no disagreement.
Well, come on. I'm waiting for someone to say Jetfire. If you're not going to say it, I'll
who's
say
who's going to address
Jetfire?
The big pink Jetfire in the room, right?
I mean, we saw it, right, before this, because it was unveiled as part of the clips at the Bandai Namco booth in Anime Japan.
Mm-hmm. But let me
like
say
a month
this
ago.
Before we get any further.
Yes.
At that event, Anime Japan, with the Bandai Namco booth,
yes.
I said... A certain scene would not be in this animation, and I said this is not made for the show. And there was a shot when there was like four Valkyries coming straight out the screen, and then they fly off. Did that happen in this show? No. Was I right? Yes. Mike? Blah. That was made for the booth and not the episode. That's what I said, and that's what happened.
And maybe it will be on the Blu-ray as an extra. Or maybe they'll have new pachinko footage. Who knows?
I don't remember. I mean, I remember you arguing about it, but I still didn't know if you meant that particular shot or the scene where they're in those VF1s. I thought you meant the scene in the VF1s.
No, I was referencing that actual shot because that shot was actually made to actually
for that
sprawl
aspect ratio.
To go across the screen and not 2x2s or 3x3s.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, no one knows what we're talking about. So.
Hopefully people have watched.
If you follow Gwen, who is also known as Totoro on the boards. Gwen Campbell at Twitter, if you look, you know, deep enough, you'll find that video.
Yeah, I did put it up. I put that exact clip, 11 seconds worth. So if you follow me on Twitter, definitely check it out. So look, to get back into the plot, guys, basically Hayate is not the best pilot, and Freya's having trouble getting it up, getting her Runrun to shine. She's not admitting the fold waves that she
needs. It's called performance anxiety.
That's the one.
Mike would know what we're talking about. When you're on camera or you're being tested, you do have performance anxieties.
Now no one really knows what they're doing.
No, they don't, and they never will.
But that wasn't one of the things that you should follow Gwen on Twitter for.
But look, Mikimo realizes that Freya is the type that if she's not in real danger or doesn't have real stakes on the table, she isn't going to react in the way she needs to, so they project the full room wall projection of Hayate's training flight. And when I say training flight, he's given 5 minutes to land one shot on Mirage.
So this is basically like being in the karaoke room in the Macross Plus.
Yes. Yes, that's a good throwback, actually. It was
very good point.
And yeah, she sings, the song reaches him, so shades of Macross Frontier, and he levels his plane out, and does a kind of girl walked out Immelmann maneuver.
That's a nice way to put it. They call it Immelmann dance. At the, was that what Mikimo? Not Mikimo, but then one of the other Delta teams.
Yeah, they did say was that an Immelmann something rather. Yeah. And he lands a shot, after which Messer just ruins the party. He crashes the party and shoots him up a bit more. But at the end of the day, you know, Mirage was really humbled and quite upset by the fact that this rookie had landed some shots on her. But Hayate realized that her teaching was helping him, so he seems to be more open to being taught now. Freya's kind of gotten over her performance anxiety. And then we go to credits, except after the credits there is finally a brief clip of the Knights of the Wind. And who is the kid apparently from the opening and who is referred to in the second episode as being ill and was singing. Whether or not it's the singing voice that starts the R syndrome, it seems similar. I'm not sold on whether it's the same.
Pretty similar, yes.
Yeah.
but anyways, and yeah. So look, impressions, guys, because we've been rambling on a fair bit here. We keep tying everything back to everything else, which this isn't like Frontier. It's not supposed to be a homage show, but we still do it.
I'm just going to jump in. As far as where we're up to right now, they still haven't established a triangle. Nobody's really going after anybody. There's a little bit of rivalry, and it's not even a rivalry of superiority or like Senpai Kohai. It's just somebody doesn't like somebody, and she's trying to, like, she was like, oh, you want to fly? Oh, I'll take you up. And she's doing it to get him out. She's not doing it to train him. Like, that's not her incentive. Her incentive is to prove that he doesn't cut the mustard. And she's actually right. And it isn't until the Freya crossover thing where Freya does the singing and kind of brings him up.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious at this point, and while both of them are greenhorns, but they can't really function effectively without each other.
Yeah,
at the moment, it really is a combination, a duo of sorts.
I'm just seeing once again. I'm going to be calling out the homages to the first Macross series. I like the fact that just like Hikaru Minmay, they were going through their own training, and they were pretty much in sync in terms of trying out for auditions, getting their first debut in the battlefield as well as on stage. Here they're doing the same thing, except they're tying it even more closely together. We're seeing that not just metaphorically, but they're literally in sync when it comes to what they're doing on their separate paths being intertwined.
That probably does make sense, because if he becomes a new Delta pilot, she will be his protect.
There is a second cockpit for a reason there, yeah.
Right.
And Okay. One thing I also like is that in many other anime, they're going to have that stick in the mud character, and they'll string it out that character is going to be the obstacle to the main character, and they always be at odds. I like that in this episode, the very end. Okay. The main character realizes why he needs her. He makes amends, and let's move on with the rest. We don't need that cliche anymore. We can move on with beyond that trope.
Renato, any thoughts on the actual story?
Well, I really liked the way it was paced. Everything was like, there was nothing wasted here. There was no scene that didn't have a point, you know. Adrian is going to hate me for this, because I'm going to bring up the pants episode of Frontier, right?
Well, we haven't gotten to the onsen episode of Delta yet. You know it's coming.
It is.
I know something's coming. Yeah.
But if we get sea cats in the onsen, then I'm good.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. The sea cats seems like they're there for comic relief. They're not. Like you said, it was supposed to be a foreshadowing of the maneuverability that he was going to exert. Later on when he was being tried and tested. So that was really cool. I really liked the way that they held off showing the battered mode until the very end, the very climax, when he triumphantly shoots Mirage. That was really fun. And then you see the battered dance around just for a little bit, and then it switches immediately back to fighter mode, and so smooth and swift. And it was, I mean, that you might say, well, CG sucks. Well, yeah, I would rather see hand-drawn stuff as well, but this is what you can do with it. So CG Valks, use them to the max. That's not wasted either. Right. Okay, thing that you guys haven't mentioned...
Go ahead. Oh, there's one thing, if you don't mind jumping in, Renato.
Okay.
One thing I've noticed, and I think it was more obvious in episode 3 because the action was in well-lit, like, daylight scenes.
Yes.
I have no problem with the texturing or the detailing or the way the CG mecha look. I mean, they're not exactly layered as into the scenes as well as they could be, but they are far above what a lot of anime does, and the difference between, say, this and an Aquarian Logos, for example, is night and day. Having said that, and I feel that the action scenes are really well choreographed, but they often don't seem to have the sense of weight, the physicality behind the Valkyries. They move too fast. Now, the Valkyries in Frontier move very fast as well, but especially in the movies, but they moved fast with weight behind them. In this, they just seem to turn on the head of a pin. And hopefully that's just because, you know, we know there's a lot of new and young, relatively inexperienced CG staff on this project, and most of them probably, and I'm presuming here, knowing the industry, what I do of it, they're probably coming, a lot of them are coming from video games, and you do, the speed at which the Valkyries bank and turn is very reminiscent of a video game.
Which is odd, because certain sequences during this episode, it looked wonderful. It did the right right way of, you know, portraying weight and motion. But then there are other times where we were seeing the same effects of, like, the Valkyries almost sliding across the screen as opposed to moving as a way a physical object would move.
Yeah, I agree. It feels like a scene-by-scene thing. I mean, there was certainly a lot of weight in the VF-171 in the first episode at the end where he... before he starts dancing, he pushes the glouge or whatever it was away.
Right.
That felt very weighty, but then he starts dancing, and then, you know, you have to give the sense of weightlessness, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, what I wanted to mention, can I say, was one thing. Who's the guy, the guy with the mohawk?
Mesa.
Okay, right. He is kind of a rival to Hayate, right? I'm not sure why he's been so antagonistic to him in this episode. Like, in the first half, Hayate starts sneezing because Garfield slapped him on the face. And he just walks up to him and says, "Get out of my way, you're in my way." And I'm like, "What the hell is that attitude coming from?" And then he delivers the final blow to him, you know, after Hayate thinks he's won and shot Mirage. Then he, what's his name again? Messer, right?
Messer.
He comes in his VF-31 and shoots him in the back, literally. And then he says, "No, that's not, this is what real war is like, you know, it's not one against one, blah, blah, blah." And fair enough, but I don't remember him showing that kind of attitude the first time they met in the previous episode.
Actually, first episode, he kind of chastised Chuck for, you know, basically hitting on, Raina?
Raina,
and saying, you know, this is not the time to do that, Chuck. And he's like, oh, okay.
I am the keeper of the names. Just look at me. I will tell you the names of the guys.
I just think he's just a really serious character that's just kind of straight face. But in the opening, he's surrounded by the kids and he's smiling. Mm. And so it's...
Yeah, that's right.
And we get a little of that when he gets to the restaurant. All of them are greeting him.
And there's a sense...
Yeah, yeah, because they love him. He's like, get out of my way. And the girls are like, oh, Mesa, he's so cute. And, oh, yeah, I'm here to eat. And like, what... Are you guys...
There are multiple relationships we're getting hints of here, though, because I don't get why Kaname is always so welcoming of Mesa. It's like... She speaks down to him as, you know, Mesa-kun, because she's 3 years older than him. And if you go by the opening, it seems like she's almost like a Monica and Wilder from Frontier kind of thing, in the way she's talking to the team leader, Arad. But she's always nice to Mesa. Chuck's sister is always staring at Mesa with like a kind of blushing. So there seems to be something there. We really don't know, but there seem to be these multiple character relationships they've yet to really talk about. Not to mention Makina and Raina. They state outright in this episode that they live together, and get to see them changing together.
Yeah.
Mike will be happy.
But the other thing is that nobody knows where Mikumo lives.
That's true.
Nobody knows what she does.
After her image that she has of the mysterious Venus, yeah.
What is, like... I only found out, I guess I wasn't paying attention, a while ago, very recently, that, hang on, what's the one with the red hair?
Kaname.
Kaname, right. So she's the leader, not Mikumo, right? Yeah. But I always thought Mikumo was the leader, because she was
like the
lead
vocalist, right?
Yeah, she's like the ace of the singing
team. The center.
Yeah, but she's older than the rest of them, so most likely she'll probably graduate from her position.
That could be,
lots of shades of what the modern idol industry is like in Japan. There's the center, there's the leader, there's the newcomer. There we go, yeah.
So we mentioned the CG elements of it. What did you think of the 2D stuff, Renato? Because I actually think that episode 2 and 3 have really picked up their game in regards to 2D character animation.
Well, like I said, the whole scene where they're swimming underwater and all the way that was choreographed, as well as the expressions that they all have, particularly in episode 2 as well, where Freya is just like, you gotta let me audition, you gotta let me, and she like explodes.
Freya's facial expressions are great, and I hope they keep that up. It's not something I think we've really seen much of in Macross before, but it's not even, is it really like a current anime thing?
Well, if you go back to the first Macross, we got a couple of sequences that were like that when it came to the bridge crew, the Centrati spies. Every so often, they'll get those kind of sequences. But, every so often, not like every episode like this, which makes it fun for Freya to have. So I'm glad of that being in there.
I don't remember any of such scenes in the original Macross, to be honest.
Do you remember when the
Where they get really spies
find out for the first time that there's two bathrooms for either sex, that kind of sequences, or...
Yeah.
So there was occasional episodes where you get those funny facial expressions. So.
Yeah, it was nothing to this extreme, though.
No, not in every episode for one character. Yeah. Freya being the main one of the main characters and having that episode in episode, that's fun, yeah.
If they ever make a Figma of Freya, they're going to have fun including 20 different faceplates for her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but, well, it's interesting you talk about that, because that's actually one of the things that I might be talking about later this year at Anime Expo.
Figmas?
No, the like exaggerated expressions and things like that in character animation.
I do hope you're going to do actual demonstrations of this in front of the crowd. But I suppose what you're trying to tell everyone here, Renato, is that you're going to be at Anime Expo.
Oh yeah, well, is that the place to
go ahead?
It? Okay. well, I'll announce it like properly later on.
What I like is...
But yeah, I am. Go ahead. So it comes to me.
Okay.
That's it.
What I like is Mamoru Suzuki is able to work well with the animation. She's been able to, even as a newcomer, jump in into full on characterization of despite not having very little experience beforehand. So she's been a welcome asset for this series.
Yeah.
All right. And I think we're almost good to wrap it up.
Yeah. Two things I want to know. What was the title of this episode, and what is the title of the upcoming episode?
This was Whirlwind Dogfight?
Yes.
I didn't go and check the title screen for the next one.
Shogeki no debut stage, which is shocking debut stage. So we're going to finally see, hopefully that means we'll see her in on stage for the first time as a Valkyrie, Freya.
Well, it could be, you know, Freya's version of the VF1 EX Dogfight, basically.
And what I'm hoping for is that if they're staying in sync between both Hayate and Freya, that means that the shocking part of the debut stages, you might finally get another attack. We might see Hayate in action for the first time as the Delta team.
Mm. They certainly are moving at a really fast pace. That's what gets me more than anything. The episode's over before it begins, almost. There's just so much going on. And as with all good Macross, I'm sure it's going to reward repeat viewings. But look, let's wrap it up here. People who, our regular listeners, may notice, you know, normally I'm pretty picky about having a good quality cast, about editing out any overlapping voices, any pauses. This is out there now. It's raw. It's our impressions as they come, right after we've seen it. In fact, if nothing else, guys, this reminds me of the first podcast we did when we just come out of seeing The Wings of Farewell. And we'd gotten Renato over, and we're all sitting on the ground, just talking over each other, and mostly saying Isamu, 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 for about an hour and a half. But yeah, very similar feeling. I'm looking forward to sitting down and doing this every week.
Yeah, so
except now we're saying Garfield, Garfield, Garfield. Garfield, Garfield.
So with that, the Speaker Podcast, we will continue to do the longer podcast with the upcoming fan club events, talk shows, anything that's going around in Tokyo, or if we happen to go overseas, we'll also talk about any Macross experiences we have, and those will be the longer ones. But now that we're actually doing a podcast in the middle of a broadcast, we'll be doing these Gurwalk shows, which are the shorter versions, straight to the point, and gives you any of the references you need to watch it, to listen while you're watching the dub, to listen while you're watching the Raw until the fan sub comes out, or you wait all the way until the summer when the first Blu-rays come out with subs.
Right.
So that's the approach we're going to take with this show. And with that, we appreciate everyone to listen. And again, I'm Adrian Lozano, and you can find me at Giant Robo at Twitter.
Right, and Gwyn Campbell here signing off. You can find me at Gwyn Campbell on Twitter. Egan, can anyone find you anywhere?
Mysterious Venus. I like that sound. Mysterious of
Venus. Egan is the Mikumo of the cast.
Yeah.
Renato, is there anywhere people can find you?
You can find me at Anime Expo.
There you go. All right. And on that note,
third of July.
This is the most recent episode of the Speaker Podcast and the first Gurtalk episode about Delta Episode 3. God, what a lot of numbers and episode numbers. And we're folding out.